Innovation, disruption, and big issues. This is Business Game Changers with Sarah Westall.
Hi, welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. This is the second part of the interview that we did with Cynthia McKinney, and she's going to continue talking about the APEC, how that works, and she's also going to get into her relationship with Robert David Steele. People are accusing him of being a CIA asset to discredit her, and she's going to respond to that. I think this is an important interview for everyone. I think this is an important interview, and I hope you listen to the whole thing. She's also needing $20,000. That's all she needs to get from Bangladesh to the United States to support the hashtag Unrig tour. That's just for her. I know that they're trying to raise more money to be able to go around the country, but just an additional $20,000 for her to be able to support her getting from Bangladesh to the country and what she needs. So if you could support that, that would be great. I have the links here now, and then also at the end of the show, I will have that as well. So let's get back into my interview now with Cynthia McKinney.
And so we go up to D.C., and Margie Pitts Haynes asked the unthinkable question. She's sitting across the table from Ellen Malcolm, millionaire to millionaire, because remember, Ellen Malcolm was the heiress to the IBM fortune. Then she starts Emily's List. And she said, do you have to be Jewish in order to get Emily's List endorsement? The room, you could have heard a pin drop. And so in 1996, after this whole redistricting thing, Emily's List was confronted with the Cynthia McKinney candidacy again. And so they stepped up and endorsed me, but it was under tremendous pressure for being outed. So the point that I'm making is that your currency with the pledge, now of course the pledge has been changed to language. So what the candidate, Democrat, Republican, Independent, well, basically the system is already so rigged that if you're an independent or a libertarian, they're not going to pay attention to you so much because you're not going to win. But if you are a Democrat or a Republican, then it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter who wins, because the Israel lobby is going to win, because you're going to write a statement. And in that statement, you're going to basically state what AIPAC wants you to say. So now, how do you, I'm going to look at my time so that I don't go over time too much, but so how do you recognize this? We had a special election in Georgia for Tom Price's seat, who was selected as the Secretary of HHS.
Okay, so, I'll put that up there.
Yeah, okay. And so the two candidates, there were a bunch of candidates, but in the end, there was a runoff, and there were two candidates, John Ossoff, who was a Democrat, and Karen Handel, who was a Republican. So what I did was to see if the pledge was in action. So I went to John Ossoff's website. Let me do that now. I went to his website to see what I could find. And sure enough, on his website, under priorities, there was, scroll down and you can see U.S.-Israel relations. And I said, and I look at it and I see Iran, Hezbollah. Okay, and then of course John is Jewish and he talks about his travels to Israel, a national security staffer in Congress. If you go to his about page, which I didn't know until just now, but when you go to his, now of course my computer is messing up, but when you go to his about page, then you see that he has some relationship. Let me find it here. I've got to find you. He has some relationship to Madeleine Albright and Michael Oren. He studied under Madeleine Albright and former Israeli ambassador to the United States, Michael Oren, as an undergraduate at Georgetown. Now, here's the thing. We already know what Madeleine Albright's foreign policy was. It was abhorrent, and I write about it under, that was under Bill Clinton, and I write about it in my book and the way I challenged at every step of the way, challenged Clinton's foreign policy in my book, Ain't Nothing Like Freedom. That's sort of like maybe probably part of the reason that I got into trouble, because one, I set a bad example by not signing the pledge, okay? So that's not gonna work. But then I also countered at every step of the way the horrible foreign policy of the Clinton administration. Michael Oren just happens to be the ambassador who at an Aspen Institute conference discusses the dissolution of Sykes-Picot. Sykes-Picot was the secret treaty that created the states that exist now in West Asia from the Ottoman Empire. So the reason Iraq looks the way it looks now is because of Sykes-Picot, which was this secret agreement between Britain and France to carve up the goodies of the Ottoman Empire after World War I. Mm-hmm. And so what he talks of, Oren talks about the dissolution of Sykes-Picot. Well, it's not happening because those countries don't work any longer. It's happening because that's U.S. policy. And that's U.S. policy that benefits Israel. And how does it benefit Israel? Through the Balkanization of every one of Israel's neighbors. So, and not only Israel's neighbors, every Muslim majority country. So you end up getting Sudan split in half, where I don't know if I told you before, I was in a conference in Ireland with two Sudanese women, one from the north and one from the south, and they literally cried because this was right after their country had been split. And why did that happen? It happened because Sudan was on that target list. Sudan was on the seven countries that we have to go to war against: Sudan, Somalia, Libya. It became eight when they added Yemen, Syria, Iran, you know, that list that Wesley Clark talked about. So we have a candidate, most of the people. So now we know that this candidate, because he studied under Madeleine Albright and he studied under Michael Oren, this candidate is going to be another vote for Israel in the Congress. Do we really need that? Okay, so then you say, okay, well, let me go take a look at Karen Handel's website. And we go to her website and we see that she has a section on Israel as well. And here she's talking about Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran. Imagine that. So whether it's John Ossoff or Karen Handel, the vote for war for Israel is going to be the same. So now how do we
Do you think that behind the scenes they had to make an agreement to put that up on their websites?
Yes.
Okay. So
yes. I mean, it doesn't happen. I mean, this doesn't just happen.
So
it's planned.
So the agreement that you had to sign is probably something like what they had to sign, but it had to do with you need to put these words up on your website and you need to do. Okay.
Right. Right.
And there was a recent legislation that went through that kind of gives that example as well that you are going to share with us, right?
Right. So then what I did was I got a tip off and I went and I started looking at legislation. And I went to the schedule for the House consideration of bills. And what I found was very strange. It was a bill that didn't have a number, no number at all. It had been introduced on July 21st, but it had no number. The strange thing about it was that it was scheduled to be considered under suspension of the rules that week. So the bill, the language is introduced on the 21st of July. It's put on the calendar for consideration for the week of July 24th. And the bill is a horrible bill that basically is a declaration of war against Russia, Iran, and North Korea, and nobody's talking about it. And then what I find is that when the bill actually gets a number, it gets a number at 7:50 in the morning on July 25th, and the bill is passed at 5, let me go get the vote. Final vote, the bill is passed at 5:13 the same day.
So we have a bill that's just passed that essentially declares war on Russia,
Iran, and North Korea. And this bill was in the House for a total of 4 days. 3 of those days, it had no number. 1 day, it gets a number at 7:50 in the morning, and at 5:13 is voted on, and the bill is 184. Let me just pull up the bill. The bill is almost 200 pages.
So
what, who read the bill?
Nobody.
Who read the bill? It's 184 pages.
So
now, okay, you can say, okay, well, I already know what it is. You know, members of Congress who follow these things, they might say, okay, well, I don't have to know what the bill is. I don't have to read the bill. I know what the bill is. But you're voting on a veritable war measure, and Russia has already said, we're going to respond. You put sanctions on us, we're going to respond. Iran has said, you put sanctions on our Republican Guard or whatever they're called. IGRC, I think is what it is. It's in the bill. IRGC. You put sanctions on our IRGC, and we're going to respond. So now we've already got two countries that said they're going to respond, and North Korea is unpredictable. So why does the Congress support this? No debate on this bill that can, you know, so they say, okay, well, we knew what was in the bill because we've been having offline discussions about North Korea and Russia. But then in the midst of all this, why vote for the bill? Now,
so can I ask you?
Let me give you the vote. The vote. Who supported the bill? Every member of the Congressional Black Caucus. They claim that they are the conscience of the Congress. They voted for the bill. There were only three people who did not vote for the bill. Tulsi Gabbard voted for the bill. The people that you look up to and say, okay, well, maybe there's a chance they're going to speak out, they voted for the bill. Who? I've been touting Walter Jones. He voted for the bill. Who? Let me just get the... Yeah, there he is. Okay. Who did not vote for the bill? Well, there were seven Republicans that didn't vote at all. There were four Democrats that didn't vote at all.
Is that their way not to vote for it? Is that their way to just get out of it?
It could be. You would have to go and look at... sometimes you just take a walk because you're so fed up. Let's take a look and see. I'll be able to tell you in a minute. Okay. So Barbara Lee voted for the bill. Who else? Those four not voting. Let me just go down to it. The four not voting. Crowley, Cummings, Danny Davis, Napolitano. I know them. Grace Napolitano, Danny Davis, Cummings, and Crowley. I know all of them. So more than likely, they took a walk. More than likely. But you'd have to go back and see if they voted on other things that same day. Because if they didn't vote on this and they voted for other things the same day, then you can say they took a walk. Or you can say, otherwise there would be some language in the House record saying, I inadvertently missed the boat. Had I been here, I would have voted yes or no. So I don't see any of that. The three that the people of the U.S. can say took a stand against something stupid that the Israel lobby wanted. But see, this is the kind of thing happened all the time when I was there. You get a bill, is introduced one day, and is voted on the same day. That's not regular order. That's not the way legislation is supposed to be debated and deliberated upon. And so you know that's one of the signatures that this is a priority of AIPAC. And so the other thing I wanted to say is that so the amount of money that goes to congressional candidates that is labeled pro-Israel money is vastly understated, because you've got the Gus Savage talked about this, that you've got the New Jersey Garden Club, which is really just a front pack that's a pro-Israel front pack, and they're giving to his opponent. And so he talks about that the New Jersey Garden Club is giving $5,000 to his opponent. What's their interest in a Chicago race? But at the time, the pro-Israel lobby had been instructed to go against Gus Savage. So he explains all of this, and it's on the House record. It's in the congressional record. He tells the whole story. So those three who voted against this nonsense this very dangerous nonsense are Amash, Duncan from Tennessee, and Massey. And the three of them are Republicans. So you can now legitimately say that the Democratic Party is a war party. And quite frankly, the Republican Party is a war party.
Three and doesn't make them a non-war party.
Right, right. So the Republicans are a war party too. And I would have thought that, okay, so Donald Trump basically destroyed the Republican Party. So why Trump, POTUS Trump, is relying on the party that he destroyed, refused to support him, and refused to support the agenda of candidate Trump? Why he's relying on them, I'll never know. Okay, I can accept that he never expected that he would win. And so this was, as we now know, thanks to WikiLeaks, that the Clinton campaign had a strategy to promote him because, of course, she looks great next to the crazy Donald Trump, the crazy orange man, right? Well, her plan didn't work out so well. And her plan didn't work out so well because of people like me. There were many, how can I say, former Democrat voters who nominally you would say, okay, Democrat, she would probably vote Democrat voter, but I left that long time ago. But anyway, who walked away from Hillary. And then the rest of them stayed home. So if you correctly analyze the vote, and you are on Trump's staff, and then you are on POTUS Trump's staff, you're on his campaign staff, and then you're on POTUS Trump's staff, then the first thing you need to do politically is to begin to look out for what's going to happen 4 years from now. So you're a minority president. What that means is that you got a minority of votes from the people of the U.S. So in order to safeguard your position, the only logical thing to do is to try and serve the interests of the people who allowed you to have that position. Now, that's three categories of people. Well, maybe it's only two. Let me see. Those who actively campaigned for and in the end campaigned for Trump and provided that lift at all times. That's three. Those who voted for Trump, and then those who stayed at home. But because without that inner city vote, translated to be the black vote, that staying at home, he wouldn't be the POTUS. So now, what do? You serve through your policymaking power now those who stayed at home. You serve them. You're the president. You're their president. You serve them. That's not happening. You serve the people who gave you lift. You serve them. Maybe that's happening. I don't know. And the people who voted for you because of what candidate Trump actually said, you serve them by keeping your promises. And that's not happening. So what is happening in POTUS, with POTUS Trump's staff, now that they actually have state power to wield, is incomprehensible to me somebody who understands, one, the power of the position, two, the responsibility of the position, and three, the potential of the position for another 4 years. They're not doing it. Now, why? I don't know why. But this idea, I mean, clearly they lack vision. Clearly they don't know a thing about politics. I mean, at the end of the day, you've got Kellyanne Conway doing whatever she's doing, which is fine. She's in, you know, in the White House. That's fine. But does her husband also have to be in the administration? I mean, come on. You've got Jared and you've got Ivanka. Do they have to be in the conference, you know, in the administration? I mean, they wake up with him and go to bed with him. Do they actually have to be in the administration too? I mean, this is just totally ridiculous. And it probably gives us a glimpse into how the Trump businesses are run, or I should say misrun. And it's through the power of Trump's personality only, and couple that with the illegal and vastly unethical trash or waste that is also a part of the business practices of the Trump empire. And so this is what we get.
Well, can I ask you a little more about that bill, the declaration of war, essentially? What happens now with that? Does it go farther? I mean, it's past Congress. Is it gonna? Has it gone to Trump's desk?
It has passed the House. Now, here's the interesting thing. So the Congress, the media have not accurately informed the people of the United States and the world, because the U.S., what the U.S. does affects the world. And I believe that they have not adequately informed the people of the U.S. about this legislation, because they're in on the rigging. This is how the system is rigged, and they're in on it. So what they said, if you notice, all of the news is about sanctions against Russia. Well, okay, so I took a look at why, okay, great, it's coming back now. Why are they talking about the, here, let me go to related bills now. I did not send this to you. Senate Bill 722 is what, when they mentioned the bill number, that was the number that they mentioned, which is a bill number about Iran. And so now that bill was actually passed. 722 went through regular order, which means that there were a series of votes on it. It was heard in committee and that sort of thing. It passed the Senate on June 29th. And once a bill passes the Senate, then it's sent over to the House. So now here's what I suspect is going to happen. That the House bill, which targets three countries, is going to become the bill. And these other bills that target only one country will be wrapped up in the bill. But the parliamentary procedure now is that a conference committee will be formed, and then the versions, the different versions of all these bills will be reconciled. And then there will be one bill with one language. That bill will then be voted on in the House, and that bill with the unified language will be voted on in the Senate, and then it will be sent to the president for his signature. And any one of these bills, or any combination of these bills, or this particular House bill that has all three of the countries in it, should be vetoed by Trump. The question is, has he been so beaten up that he feels politically that he cannot veto the bill? Now, what would lead him to feel that he can't veto the bill? Because his campaign, which is still raising money, should be actively involved recruiting candidates, financing candidates, so that he can have Trump Democrats and Trump Republicans elected in 2018. Otherwise, impeachment or worse is on the table. So all of this that the Democrats are doing, there's a method to this madness. And so it's Russia, not because it was Russia, it's Russia because Russia has always been the end game. It was not the, and then, so, oh my gosh. So there's even more.
So and based so on, now, so when you look at these bills, and when do you conceive that we could possibly go to war because of this? I mean, what kind of timeline do you think this could cause for the United States and war?
When the United States does this, assuming, and you know, AIPAC pro-Israel bills, they all pass, or like overwhelmingly. So the president vetoes the bill, and then it just goes back to Congress, and Congress overrides the veto. It will happen. So it's going to become law one way or the other.
Because there's a vast majority have already voted yes. So it'll become law.
Right. And that's because of the pledge. Now, remember, all of this is linked because you've got people in the Congress who are there by virtue of having written the paragraph or signed the pledge. So when AIPAC comes to collect, which means you got to vote for this bill, then the transaction, these are transactional leaders, not transformational leaders. And so the transaction is consummated, and you get these lopsided numbers, 400-3. Or in the Senate bill that they that the media are talking about, which is 722, they talk about that bill. And that bill is only two. Let me go to the votes for that bill. Only two people voted against it, and that was Bernie Sanders and Rand Paul. Not Elizabeth Warren, not any of the women. So you're supposed to have women in the Senate who want peace. No, none of them. Bernie Sanders and Rand Paul.
Okay, so again, the bills go through, even if he vetoes it or not, what kind of timing do you see sanctions being put on? Just, it's hard to predict. Sanctions being put on these countries and it turning into a real war versus us just kind of, you know, tinkering around the edges.
Well, it's already a real war. You have to understand people are dying.
Well, that's true. But do you foresee us actually having military combat directly with Russia. I know we're building up forces on the Russian border, and we have been for a while.
Yeah. The dangerous thing is, it like, so we're in a game of chicken. And if you go back to World War I, a series of, well, I am with this person, I'm with this person, I'm with this country, I'm with that country. All of a sudden, I have a relationship, and so that country was attacked. Now I got to attack, and all of a sudden, you've got World War I. And George Herbert Walker Bush called these Zyokons that are in control of the Congress now and in control of the U.S. state, the apparatus of the state, he called them the crazy cousins that you keep down in the, keep locked down in the basement. But now they're in charge. They're in control. So they will go to war. And I believe that the whole, you remember the Minot Air Force Base missing nukes? So when that happened, I believe that was going to be a false flag carried out by the Zyokons, but under the name, of the United States. And they were going to drop those bombs somewhere. So you've got the Zyokons who are in charge, who are completely unpredictable, but predictable in the sense that, yeah, they will do a war. And then you've got the Russians and the Iranians and the North Koreans who are saying, wait a minute. This, we are sending you every warning that this is going to result in war. And Putin just reiterated. But this becomes law.
So our
and Russia, wait, and Russia has already said they're going to respond.
So our
response will be at the time and manner of their choosing, but there will be a response. And then what are your crazy cousins in the basement who are now in charge of the whole house? What are they going to do?
So are our Congress people clueless? I mean, do they not know that this is what they're causing? They're so afraid of the lobby that they're willing to go to war?
Well, I use Sibel Edmonds' testimony as an example. Of course, you know, I was there and I know things that were going on. And you see, I got into trouble because I worked. I didn't go to the gym. I didn't play basketball. I didn't go on the trips, the gambling trips. I didn't go on, you know, I didn't do those social things. I worked. But there's a lot of socializing that takes place. And sometimes that socializing, not to say that I didn't wholly socialize, but I didn't, some of it I just, you know. And with me being a single woman, I could do whatever I wanted to do, right? But if you're married, and you don't even have to do anything, but so, you can be given the appearance of having done something, and you can believe in your mind that you've done something. I mean, you know, like Joe Scarborough has a dead woman found in his congressional office. Do you think I would be rewarded with a television show if I had a dead man found in my congressional office? Heck, I can't even get a job because I tell the truth. Can't get a job in the U.S.
Okay. So that is absolutely incredible. I wanted to get you threw a whole thing at me about this bill that I was unaware of and the march to war, which people have been talking about for a while, but this is evidence of it.
It's here.
Yes. Very sad. I want to talk to you about the hashtag on rig. I think this is going to, the timing of that is, I would assume, would make your hat, would really encompass your hashtag on rig. The whole war.
Yeah.
It would have to, I would think. You'd have to start talking about it everywhere you go. Recently, Meetup website canceled your account and refused to accept, which is a big deal, right? What are your thoughts on that? What are your thoughts on that? Where is it now?
I think as this march to war crystallizes, we will be able, the people who are paying attention, the attentive 2%, will be able to discern who is a part of the war team and who is not. So Meetup canceled us, and they said because it was, you know, we were doing with the alt-right. That's what they sent to us in writing, that we were providing a platform for the alt-right. All we want to do is talk to the alt-right and talk to the alt-left. But the interesting thing is that there are 1,000 Meetup, communities that have been sponsored by the Anti-Defamation League. That's okay. The Anti-Defamation League spied on Americans, surveilled them, including even members of Congress. The Anti-Defamation League slings around the characterization of people as anti-Semitic for no reason at all, and have been challenged in court and had to pay one Colorado couple $8 million because they called them anti-Semitic, and they weren't. But they had a real beef with a Jewish family that happened to be their neighbors. And the Anti-Defamation League came to the defense of the Jewish family and called the couple anti-Semitic. This is the way this thing gets thrown around. People didn't know it back in the time when I was talking about what Israel was doing and the maneuvering that I saw in the Congress. And of course I'm black, so it sticks. But after that couple won the $8 million judgment and the Anti-Defamation League had to pay, you will notice that the use of that characterization is slung around so easily, not so easily anymore. They can't use it because if they get sued again, they will lose.
Well, the problem is that you can't have a beef with anybody without being accused of. So you're accused of being.
Here's another thing that is percolating up in the Congress, and that's the bill to put you in prison if you advocate BDS, boycott, divestment, and sanction, which worked in the issue of apartheid in South Africa. And apartheid now has been adjudged by the international community to be a crime against humanity. And Israel is an apartheid state. I've served on the Bertrand Russell Tribunal on Palestine that came to that conclusion. And Israelis themselves are saying that Israel is an apartheid state, which means that Israel is in violation of international law. And yet, if you criticize Israel and use a tool that was used with South Africa, if you use that same tool, you could go to prison as a convicted felon. That legislation is in the Congress right now. And let me see if my internet connection will let me find it. I don't know.
If you can send that to me, I will put that up as well on the video.
Okay.
So you can do that afterwards.
I will send it to you.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is just crazy times we live in. I need to ask you some stuff that's been going around on the internet with you and Robert. I think it's important that you address mm-hmm. this. Lately, people have been accusing Robert David Steele of being a CIA agent used to discredit you. Could you speak about that and what you think about it?
Well, in the first place, there's this game called Guilt by Association, which is also the name of a book written by Jeff Gates. And in this book, Jeff Gates delineates quite clearly that guilt by association is a game that is played by these same Zyokon forces. So you associate with that person, and therefore, and that person is reprehensible, so therefore you are reprehensible too. The only person who can discredit me is me. I discredit myself through my behavior or my actions, and if I say something that's wrong and I don't correct it, then I stand to be discredited. So I'm not going to play the guilt by association game, because I understand that it is indeed a game. But now, what are Robert David Steele's motives? I can only take him at face value that he at least buys into the need for the alt-right and the alt-left to come together and to have fruitful discussions about ways in which we can move the United States forward. Now, I also have theory from Paulo Freire, and I'm not sure if you are aware of Paulo Freire. He's a revolutionary thinker back from the days of Frantz Fanon and Jose Maria Sison from Philippines. The three of them were great revolutionary thinkers about colonialism and neo-colonialism and the role that people can play in order to defeat all of the games, the power games that contribute to oppression. So Paulo Freire writes in Pedagogy of the Oppressed the mechanisms that are used for oppression. One of those mechanisms is divide and rule. And so we know that divide and rule is always used because divide and rule is quite successful. You balkanize the population and what they call it now, identity politics. Yes, I am entitled to my identity. No doubt about that. And I bring my whole identity into this conversation. And at the same time, I want you to do the same. And it's only through my wholeness as an individual, as a person, and your wholeness as a person that we can come together and actually achieve something and accomplish something. So Paulo Freire has the mechanisms of oppression, and then he has the tools for liberation. And collaboration is one of the tools of liberation. Unity for liberation, organization, collaboration, I believe, is one, and then cultural synthesis. So we go through all of these tools of liberation, and it means that in order for us to move forward, we got to accept people with all of their warts. Now, I have not seen yet anything that would make me pull away permanently from Robert David Steele. My eyes are open. And as long as my eyes are open, okay, I'm going to walk this. One of the leadership guru says you build the bridge as you walk on it. And that's what I'm doing. I'm building this bridge as I walk on it. And my partner is not perfect, and I am not perfect either. So with our imperfections intact, we build this bridge together. We interact with each other. We say things, we pull back from things, we alter, we amend. This is what total quality management is all about in the corporate world. You're always in a state of trying to get better. And that's what, and so yes, that's what I say yep. that we are trying to do with hashtag Unrig. And the moment I see that there's something that is so egregious that I cannot continue to build this bridge as we walk on it, I will walk away.
Well, I got to tell you, because I've done some interviews, as you know, a series with him, and I keep walking just like you, and I think he's genuine. I mean, and even so, what he's doing and what he's trying to get accomplished with you, he has nothing but praise for you, is so needed. I mean, we really need
this. We need it in the most desperate way. And so on the last interview that we did, I think it was with Caitlin Johnstone, he said, we need to come together, and then we need to work out the Election Reform Act. And I said, Robert, we need to come together and then decide what our next step is. So we have these kinds of discussions all the time. And I have room. He gives me that room to disagree. And we are working on it. So the country, how long are we, let's put it this way. Divide and rule has worked. And we are aware that it is in play. Let's finally figure some other way out and give it a chance.
Amen. Coming together as one, we have to all realize that the system needs to change, no matter where you are on the political spectrum. So bringing two sides together is very powerful and it has a lot of meaning.
And we've done it.
I just see good right now.
We did it when the Green Party and Ralph Nader as an independent came together under the leadership of Ron Paul in 2008. We did a press conference and we said, okay, this is, and the Constitution Party with Chuck Baldwin. We came together and we said, we can agree on these things. One of the things was no more wars. The other thing was the Federal Reserve. So if we can come together on only two issues, imagine how far we can go on no more wars and dealing with the Federal Reserve. If we come together, there's more of us than there are of them.
Very, very powerful. Okay, well, I got to ask you, you're currently in Bangladesh. Will you be flying back soon, or when do you think you're going to be joining Robert on the big state tour that you're going
to
be doing?
Well, we're trying to work the modality out because, you know, I have to work for a living. And so we have to figure that out. So on some, he's entertaining the idea of me Skyping in, but me Skyping in really is not the, we need an angel really who would just help me step in. You know, look, I just got my PhD. So what does that mean? I've got student loan. And so if we could raise enough money so that at least I can maintain my responsibilities, then I get on the road tomorrow. You know, it's just like that.
How much is that? How much do you need?
Well, we have talked about an additional 20,000. Puts me in the U.S.
Okay.
For about 2 months.
Okay, so how can people donate to that? Because that's something I think we could do, right? People can do this. How do people donate to you, to this cause?
They
Where do they go?
They can go to my website, or they can go to hashtag Unrig. Let me see, hashtag Unrig. Or there's the Indiegogo campaign, but there, that's not.
Okay, I'll put all those links
actually,
up right here.
The Indiegogo campaign is strictly for the movement around. So anything that goes to me should either go to Robert's PayPal account or to my PayPal account. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So we can, 20,000, that can happen. And then we can get Cynthia McKinney on the road with Robert to do the 50 states. Okay. So what else can people do to help participate?
I think it's really important right now for people to call in to C-SPAN and talk about hashtag Unrig. I want to give a shout out to Jeremy, who did it, I think, yesterday or the day before, and it was fabulous. And so if we could get people to call in to C-SPAN on that morning program that we have, and then, of course, you know, it's replayed a second time in the second hour and then throughout the day. So if we could get people to call in and talk about hashtag Unrig and direct them to the hashtag Unrig website, and hopefully a few of them will give some donations. But what we are really interested in now is being invited to have a discussion on C-SPAN.
Okay, yeah. That would be great. So people calling in, talking about hashtag Unrig, that will really help get the momentum going. Also, tell them that you want that discussion on C-SPAN.
Right. That's right.
Excellent. Anybody has a connection where they can make that happen immediately?
Yes.
Please do that.
Right. That's right.
That would help
that's
too. Right. Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us. This was a very great interview. I really appreciate it. I love talking to you. You're just a wonderful person, and we're very fortunate
to have
you.
Thank you so much, Sarah. And I mean, this took way more time. I've got papers to grade than I expected, but I was happy.
It's your fault because you brought up too many. You brought up too many interesting things.
It's my fault. But this information, I hope I don't lose your audience, because the information of going through the legislative process, I know it's dull and boring, but this is how we have gotten into this mess that we're in, war after war after war after war, and our members of Congress are complicit in it.
Yes, they are. And I'm going to make that, please listen to this show in its
entirety. Right. Okay.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, hold on.